that got recorded.
Okay. Use it. Go for it.
Thank you for joining the Escape With Me book club. Escape with me, Sam Reiner.
And me, Hannah Roxell.
Into our most recent raid, come with us as we evade reality and go into detail about a new book. We'll be covering the book from beginning to end, so remember, there will be spoilers. Today we are going to Hell in a Handbasket, frankly. Published January 27th, 1927, The Big Four is a shakeup in the Agatha Christie formula as she tackles an action-filled thriller over a mystery. Hercule Poirot has met his greatest adversary yet, a criminal organization that is responsible for the breakdown of society the world over. With science, money, and intelligence on their side, will Hercule be able to stop them and their plans, or will Hercule lose both the game and his best friend's life? Hastings gets knocked out so many times in this book, I'm a little concerned, but that's beside the point.
There might be a reason he's not super intelligent.
I'm concerned. Concussions are a thing. Anyway, getting to the historical context. So this is fun, because technically we have to go over Roger Ackroyd. So the last time we left off, it was spring 1924. So I have to get us all the way to January 1927. And this very eventful year happened in 26. So
Agatha had a rough year.
Since last book-wise, we have been now introduced to Colonel Race, who we meet in Death on an Isle. His book came out in 1924 and is called The Man in the Brown Suit. And then we are introduced to another character that will come up again, and I think we'll meet Hercule Poirot, Superintendent Battle. For once, someone's not a colonel. His book came out in 1924 called The Secret of Chimney. I did double check that. There is no the.
Interesting. I guess it's a location.
That's what I think. Maybe we'll get there.
Maybe.
Oh, interesting. The Secret of Chimneys is, like I said, it's a battle superintendent book, but in the TV show? I think so. In the TV show, they change it to a Miss Marple.
Huh, I guess I didn't want to introduce another new character.
I guess not. I mean, I guess she didn't have enough books. Granted, she has significantly less than Hercule Poirot.
Yeah.
So the best book, of course, comes out in 1926, Murder of Roger Ackroyd. So now that you've had a chance to read it, what are your thoughts? Did you like it?
I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I did not see the plot twist at the end coming. I was arguably probably the worst place to be listening to that audiobook when the plot twist happened, because I was in the middle of a workout and it happened and I was on the inside. It's like 5:45 in the morning in the gym and I'm like, oh my god, trying to keep my composure but freaking out.
Yeah, is good.
Not my wisest decision. I had to stop the book and put music on. Someone probably thinks I've gone off the deep end. Good book though.
So yes, is very good. So that came out in 1926. So let's just skip to the main thing. Not much really happened that is super noteworthy between 1924 and 1926, because in comparison, to start off our wonderful year, in April, her mom passes away, who she was very close with. And she's a huge credit to why she wrote, because her mom wrote and her sister wrote, and so she wrote. So that happened. And then in August, this woman, who is her whole life, all she really wanted to be was a wife and a mother and want to get married and be in love and just be a good wife, gets told by her husband that he's divorcing her because he fell in love with another woman. Not a good year. Then we get to December 1926. December 3rd, this is a surprisingly well-documented event considering it was the 1920s, but December 3rd, 1926, Archie and Agatha fight and he goes to his parents without her. And then she disappears from her house. Just straight up gone.
We're always one for the drama.
Straight up gone. They don't know where she is. The next morning, they find her car in a chalk quarry with an expired driver's license and clothes inside. And so they're like, holy crap, she's drowned herself. But they couldn't find any body. So the world starts looking for this woman. So many police, thousands of volunteers. They have rewards going out. It makes it all the way across the Atlantic. It is on the New York Times front page. 10 days, everyone is looking for this woman. It's reported that Arthur Conan Doyle gave a spirit medium one of her gloves to find her. That's where we're at. 10 days, no one can find her. And then she's found in a spa 184 miles north of her house. How this woman got here, no one knows. Because she left her car in the chalk quarry. No one knows. But 184 miles north of her house, she's found at a spa hotel, checked in with a name and the last name of her husband's mistress, claiming that she's from Cape Town, South Africa.
She really is the drama, and I love her for it.
So from there, she ends up going to her sister's and completely cutting off from the world.
That's fair.
And no one knows what happened or why that happened or how it happened. It just happened because she never talked about it ever again. Even in her autobiography, just completely skips it. Doesn't talk about it at all. And later on, two doctors would go ahead and certify, hey, she has genuine memory loss. She does not know what happened. But the public, on the other hand, were like, mm. And so depending what biography you read from her, one biography will be like, oh, she did it on purpose. The other one would be like, oh no, she was having an emotional breakdown. So she knew what she was doing, but her emotions were in control. Range, so crazy. The public at the time, however, were mad.
That's fair.
They thought this was either a publicity stunt or she was trying to frame her husband for murder.
I mean, pretty effective way to do it.
Yeah, there you go. So that's where we are in January when the Big Four is published. Also in January, Agatha begins her 3-month-long trip to the Canary Islands with her daughter. I don't blame her.
Yeah, I'd go too.
At all.
But just imagine going through something that traumatic that your brain's just like, we're just going to forget it. It didn't happen.
Those two things back to back, one of those is traumatic enough.
I don't blame her.
It was not good. It was not a good time. No matter why she was out there, it was not because of a good time.
No, it was the opposite of a good time.
And frankly, at this point, whether or not she remembered or not at the end of her life, I don't care. It's just nuts. And I honestly feel bad. I don't think it was necessarily a publicity stunt.
No, I think it was just perceived as that.
I think it was perceived as that because, first of all, she did not need more people knowing about her books. If you're famous enough to get on the New York Times first page, you didn't need to get on the New York Times first page. So that is everything. The year Roger Ackroyd came out was not a good year for her.
Poor Agatha.
And when she talks about that year in her biography, she basically was like, it was a rough time, and that's all we need to say about that.
We're just gonna move right on.
Exactly. So, our background, this is a new read.
Neither of us read them. That's gonna be true for literally the rest of these.
Yep.
But age level adult.
Oh, yeah.
Because default. Although, granted, this one's a little bit more nuts than your average. Fair.
Just a little, yeah.
Content warning, racial slurs for Chinese people. I want to amend something I said in the third book episode. I was like, oh, does she use the really bad one because she's trying to make the character look bad? No, because Jap says it in this one. It's just her.
It's just Agatha.
But murder, kidnapping, so much kidnapping. So much kidnapping.
I think we set a record for kidnapping.
Torture mentioned several times. There is a little gore in some of the deaths, especially one of them specifically involving a fireplace. PG-13 language and suicide. I know that isn't a lot. Compared to how surface level and light some of the other content warnings are, it's like, oh, murder. And it's like, yeah, but it's like super clean and scrubbed versus this one. I feel like it's just more. She really went for that action vibe.
She was really, I think, still working through some emotions.
Could be. I don't know how she does. Minimum publishing a book a year. Maybe more. So she was probably writing this during the worst year of her life.
Yeah, that would explain a lot.
So to judge a book by its cover, I have one that's a chessboard and there's a black bishop that's knocked over and there's a 4 on the cover in red, which it took me way too long to realize it was a 4.
Yeah, we had the same cover and I didn't realize it was a 4.
Me neither! I thought it was how the piece was moving.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a 4 until I was reading this out. And I had to pull up my Audible app and look at it and be like, is that a 4?
Yeah.
And it's because of how they tilted it that my brain was like, that's just some weird lines. No, it's a 4.
Yeah, it's a 4.
Y'all could have done that better.
I'm also curious why it's a black bishop on the cover, because in the book, the bishop that gets used to kill the Wundu is a white bishop.
Yeah, that is interesting.
And it would have been better contrast. You would have seen it. I don't know. I don't know how they made these decisions, but that's what it is. So I thought this was going to be chess related.
Yeah, that's what I was really expecting.
And it is!
Sorta, vaguely.
But I don't think that really really clarifies this. None of the covers really do. Some of them are better than others. The one on Goodreads is, oh, there's four people standing around a four.
Oh, interesting. That sounds cool.
It's okay. It's mid. It does a better job of explaining what the book is about, but eh. And then there's a couple other ones. There's a lot of them. Imagine, since 1927, there have been a lot of covers. And some of them are better than others. But it's, like I said, I just don't think anything could have prepared me for this. It's a ride. We're going on a ride. Let's go on a ride, shall we?
Let's do this.
First of all, Hastings back. I forgot that you told me that he would be back for this book, and so I was real sad.
He wasn't as annoying as usual, though. I don't know why.
Because we were all Hastings! We were all going, what in the world is going on?
Yeah, that's fair.
And everything he did helped advance the plot versus normal, where it's just like, oh, I'm gonna make this assumption about this, and then Perot has to correct me. Or, oh, let me allow this pretty woman to look at the dead body and steal the murder weapon.
Yeah, for once it was, oh, okay, you're not being too dumb.
I don't know if anyone could have handled this situation better than Hastings. I think he did his best.
I think we were all doing our best.
We were all doing our best. So he's back. He was going to London for some business, and so he's going to surprise Perot.
For 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Turned into almost a year?
Yeah, he was there for a little bit.
What does he do for work? Then he can just be like, yeah, I'm going to be gone for 2 weeks. 10 months later, still here.
I think they have a cattle ranch.
That would be nice. I would be so peeved.
I can't imagine leaving my husband for that long. Let's get this out of the way. Hastings is a better friend than he is a husband.
Honestly, yeah. I can't imagine just being like, hey, I'm gonna go do this thing for 2 weeks. I get there. It's gonna be a little bit longer, actually. He would break up with me. Either that or he would come to me and be like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, exactly.
He wouldn't just be sitting here being like, oh yeah, she'll show up whenever.
Yeah, this girl real chill. She gotta have a mister, is all I'm saying. Anyway, so he's there. It's great. It's wonderful. Woo. Yay. The joke is, Perot was actually heading to South America to surprise Hastings. I actually did like that. That was good.
I did enjoy that. I thought that was fun.
So this guy, who's the richest man in America, I guess, hired him and is like, hey, I need you to go to South America because reasons?
Yeah, we won't tell you until you're here, though.
Yeah. And so he's like, oh, well, I better go. And so Hastings is like, okay, I guess I will go with you. And so they're on the train. They are on the train to go to the port. And the train stops for some reason. And Perot's like, no, we out. And he's like, grab the luggage and jumps off the train.
This is truly the most chaotic, I think, Perot has ever been, was this book. I was like, wow, I didn't know he could be this chaotic.
I did. I feel like everything is done. He would absolutely do this. So never a dull moment with this guy. And I immediately was like, ooh, I bet that original job was just an excuse to get Perot out of the way. And I was worried permanently. Go to South America, to this random place. We totally won't murder you.
Yeah, totally not.
Well, Perot immediately is like, oh, they were trying to get me out of the way. And I was like, win. We're starting off real strong. So they get back to the house and this dude, I was so busy with the train ride. Before they get on the train, this random dude comes up to them and they're like, I need to tell you things about the Big Four, the terrible organization that controls everything in the world. And I bet this plot was so much fun in 1927. But in 2023, I am tired.
I think we all are.
I think specifically just before the invention of the internet, this was way more fun because so many conspiracy theories constantly, so many straw men constantly.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think the government is capable of being super productive to be able to control the world. I'll believe these four people. Why not?
Yeah.
We got a scientist, a rich person, a dude that's very good with makeup, and a guy we will never meet.
Who's supposedly really smart.
I guess. I'll tell you what I thought at one point, but didn't end up happening. But so yeah, this dude is like, oh my gosh, the Big Four. And then he passes out. And the doctor comes. He's like, oh, he's exhausted. So just let him sleep. And so Perot just lets that. He's like, yep, okay, gotta get on my train.
Yeah.
And so that's why he's like, no, get off the train. We gotta go now before they manage to do the... Well, they get back and he's dead.
Yep.
He died of asphyxiation like 2 hours ago. And an asylum worker shows up and is like, hey, yeah, this guy's from our asylum. Yep, that one. He's had a paranoia disorder for like 2 years, you know? So we'll come back for the body in a bit. Bye.
Yeah, which is weird.
I'm surprised he didn't take the body with him.
Yeah, but also, would he just carry it like firemen carry the dead body? How is he gonna take it?
Firemen carry a dead body. I don't know. It was weird. Why did he show up? And Perot's like, oh, he wanted to make sure he was dead. But I don't know. He just went out of the way to be the most suspicious as possible to me, just so Perot would get into the mystery and be like, haha, number four.
Yeah.
Honestly, if he hadn't done that, Hercule might never have gotten on the track. Suspect ruins their own plot.
Suspect just couldn't stay in their lane.
So Jap shows up and he's like, hey, yeah, this dude was in the Secret Service and he went to Russia 5 years ago and then disappeared. Huh. Weird. So Perot does what Perot does and is like, actually, he was poisoned. And that guy from the asylum is totally the guy who did it. So Perot is like, okay, I'm going to get invested in this. And Hastings is like, cool, we'll wait until the dude comes back to see the body. And he's like, he's not going to show back up. And I was like, then why did he? Anyway, an amazing Hastings moment happens at this point where he decides to share with the reader that Perot has been keeping his thoughts to himself. And Hastings feels that he is making a mistake by not talking about the case with him.
But he complains about that every single time. Hastings, it's not going to change.
He does, but he's never specifically been like, he's making a mistake keeping this to himself and not telling me about it. And I'm like, bruh, he doesn't need you. I don't know why you guys are such good friends.
Right.
I mean, granted, Hastings is super loyal, but I don't get it.
He is truly like the definition of a golden retriever boy.
I feel like that's an insult to golden retrievers. So they decide to go seek this dude named John Ingalls for advice. Give Hastings 5 points of the scene of him pointing out the suburb home names are stupid. Yes, they are.
That made me think of they name their homes?
Yes, they do. It's like how we name our neighborhoods. So there's another book that I read, and one of the main characters points out, oh, if you're rich, you live in a place called like Muggy Swamp. Something sad and depressing because they don't want you to know how good it is. And the other guy's still like, dude, that's a stupid name. Who would live there? And he's like, I bet you live somewhere named like Happy Meadows or something. He's like, dang right.
That's perfect.
So yeah, suburban names. So yeah, this guy named Li Chang Yin is behind everything and is trying to destroy civilization because why not? Because he could, really. And he never leaves his palace in Peking, China, where he runs terrible experiments against human beings there. So, terrible person. But he's able to control the world thanks to his three other associates. And people who move against him die in a week. And I was like, whew, Perot, we got a tight timeline. No, we don't, dear reader. No, we do not. So, John Ingle recently got a letter from this random dude who claims he knows about the Big Four and needs help getting out of the country. And Perot's like, haha, lead, let us go. And John Ingle's like, cool, I want to come too. And immediately I was like, this dude's part of this. There's no way this dude is left alive knowing all the stuff he knows about the Big Four and he's not a part of this.
Right? Literally killed a guy for writing a book or something that mentioned it. And I'm like, then how are you not dead?
So they go to the house and the dude's already dead because of course he is. And it's a brutal and very obvious murder that didn't pass as a burglary, which is a new MO. And I was like, oh, lack of time. Yes. So there was 20 minutes when the housemaid stepped out and came back in. So there's three people that live in this situation. I don't know if all three of them necessarily live in this house, but there's the housekeeper who found the body and was the one that talked to the neighbor for like 20 minutes. There's the dude who got murdered who owned the house. And then there's a manservant who claims he was doing something in the backyard and then just went straight to his room and never noticed the body.
Which is weird. Immediately, I was like, are you sure?
Yeah. And immediately, Perot figures it out because he finds three icicles on a piece of meat sitting out in the 70-degree heat. And of course, Hastings doesn't see anything weird about that.
Hastings like, yeah, it's meat.
So they've decided it's the manservant. And Perot's like, okay, I need to talk to him alone. And the inspector's like, no, but you can't talk to him. He's like, okay, I'll deal with that, what I have. And he's like, I know you didn't do it. And Grant is like, what? He's like, you need to tell us the truth right now. You found the body dead. And then you tried to steal the jade pieces to be like, oh, I need to run away because he's an ex-con and they were going to find out about it and blah, 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 blah. Well, apparently number four was pretending to be the liaison of this system that helps ex-convents find honest jobs. And I think he was pretending to be a pastor or a bishop or something. And that was number four. He got him this job, gave him a specific pair of boots that were then used to make it look like he was the murderer.
Pretty smart, actually. actually.
It's convoluted.
Yeah.
All of his plans are convoluted. And everyone's like, how in the world did he get in there? And apparently number four used the invisible waitress tip where you just don't notice people that do jobs. Like, you don't notice the waiter or waitress passing by. And so you talk in front of them. Well, in this case, he was a butcher. And he went in the house, put meat down, and then came back out. He also murdered a man. So that's how it happened. And so Poirot manages to get the other guy acquitted. Woo!
Yay, good job, Poirot.
But then we're out of leads, which, by the way, John Ingle came to this, and all he does is look at the jade carvings.
Oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that.
I'm just saying, that's sus. But okay. So we're out of leads until Jap shows up with an American Secret Service agent who has found papers detailing something that shouldn't be possible science-wise. And the scientist who is connected to it is the leading scientist, disappeared in Paris 2 months ago. Jap thinks it's a voluntary disappearance because he's wrong. And so Poirot goes to the wife and she's like, no, he would never. Here's what he was doing. And so Poirot's like, okay, I guess we're going to go track him down. And Hastings was like, that was 2 months ago. And Poirot was like, yep, off we go.
And let's go.
So he goes to France and talks to a couple of the people. And one of the people he talks to is a woman scientist who is better than the Curies in science.
Old claim.
Something to do with radium and her experiments, possibly with magnets or bioelectricity. We don't spend a lot of time there, probably for the best. But yeah, there's a lady scientist. And for some reason, there's a passage where Hastings is sexist about her being a woman scientist, and 146 people highlighted it.
Oh, that's weird.
I don't understand.
I guess 146 people either are about to roast Hastings or really hate women scientists.
Probably roast Hastings.
Yeah.
So they talk with her, blah, blah, blah. And then they find out, haha, one of her secretaries is actually a random Russian count. This?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did she ever come up in any of the other books?
I had my notes for the third book and I looked through that and I was like, clearly this would be the best way to find her, right? And I didn't find her in the third book. I don't remember her in the first or second. I think this is a new character. I'm going to say that and someone's going to pull out a random passage, like one line or something from like book two. And we're just going to be like, well,
yeah, I was like, was she on the Orient Express?
Well, if she was, that's after this.
Oh, that's true.
This is book four.
I guess it's just some random character, but I was like, she had to have been in a book, but I guess not.
They make it sound like she is. I don't remember. I have found no proof of that.
I felt like I was going crazy.
So that's a thing?
Just, I'm more and more confused, except Hastings knew it was going on this time, so I didn't like it.
So they just leave. They're like, oh, okay. They see a woman enter the house and runs up the stairs and they don't care at all. Eventually they come out to find out that she's a countess, but right then they don't care. And I was like, okay, I'm worried about Madame Oliver? Olivier? You gotta help me here.
Olivier?
Okay. Because it's Oliver with an extra I. So, okay. They're walking down the street. And all of a sudden, this tree just knocks over and almost crushes them.
Yeah, convenient falling tree.
Never confirmed. It's implied that someone did it, but it wasn't number four. Anyway, the line. Yes, but for my quick eyes, Hercule Poirot might now be crushed out of existence, a terrible calamity for the world. And you too, mon ami, though that would not be such a national catastrophe. That statement deserved its 160 highlights.
That one made me laugh. I was like, ooh, roasted.
I love this man so much when he's roasting Hastings.
It's so funny. I love it.
So, long convoluted story later, if you want to read the book, Hercule is back at Olivier's house and they get kidnapped and are pushed in a safe. And they're like, oh no, we're being pushed into a safe. And find out, haha, Olivier is number three. I had my suspicions.
And Poirot was like, but no one's going to believe me.
I had my suspicions about her because
because they spent way too much time describing her. Because there were two people that they met. And yeah, they're like, oh, this one dude. But also this lady, she feels a little bit too important to be a throwaway. But yeah, they managed to outwit her by Perot having a cigarette that's actually a blow dart with deadly poison?
Yeah, he just had it prepared. Like, okay, I just have so many questions.
I'm trying, but my suspension of disbelief is not happy. Anyway, there were too many of those. There were too many moments where he did something like that just at the last minute so they could get out of the situation.
I really just felt like I was reading a James Bond movie.
A little bit.
That felt like a very James Bond thing to happen.
Yeah. So the only thing that surprised me in the scene was Perot was actually surprised that it was Madame Olivia. I always assume he knows what's going on.
This book was just Poirot being just as confused but covering it better.
Oh my gosh. So they go back to London at this point. They manage to get the guy, and the guy's like, I will never tell you about what happened. Otherwise, I will be in danger. Fair. Don't blame him there.
I'd say the same thing if I was him.
So at this point, they get a letter from the super rich American, and he's pissed that Poirot didn't go to South America. And because of this, culprit ruins their own plot. Poirot realizes that he is number two.
Once again, couldn't just stay in your own lane.
We've got science and money and a man very good at makeup. That's his talent. Oh, and his ability to come up with convoluted murder plots.
Yes.
I would be so tired. Anyway, Perot's like, okay, we gotta do something. We need to investigate this dude. And Abe is like, hey, I need an English secretary. And so Perot's like, Hey, Stings.
It's your time to shine, honey.
What you doing for the next 3 months? Not going home to his wife.
Playing dress up.
So Hastings goes undercover as an English secretary. And I just felt like this was a plot to get a hostage. It was just too convenient. But whatever. He's working there for several months. 3 weeks in, the stenographer, who's a redhead.
Of course.
Hastings, I also have a thing for redheads, and I have never been this stupid around them. But anyway.
That's his special talent. Being shockingly stupid.
Specifically around redheads. They have done so much research into Perot and Hastings that they know this fact about him, and I'm just like, Hastings.
His wife isn't a redhead, is she?
Nope.
She's blonde. Isn't she?
Is she blonde or... I thought that was her twin. I thought she had... No, maybe she is. One of them is blonde, the other has black hair. Anyway.
Yeah.
The stenographer, who's a redhead, is like, oh no, he yelled at me because I opened a letter with the number 4 on it. What shall I do? And so Hastings is like, haha. And she even remembers exactly what it said.
That's not suspicious to you at all, Hastings.
That is not a normal person thing to be like, verbatim, here is the paragraph long. You would have to conscious effort to anyway, Hastings is like, I have solved it and I know what's going on. So he goes to a quarry to try to overhear a conversation with Ryland, except it's a trap, to the surprise of Hastings.
To the surprise of no one except the person being trapped.
And apparently he wrote a letter to Perot being like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna do this thing, and if you don't come, I'm gonna do it without you. And so Hastings feels bad because he's like, oh no, he's going to be trapped. And Perot is not an idiot, and so he shows up with the police.
Yes, Poirot knew the whole time it was going to be a trap.
I mean, even if you didn't, why wouldn't you not show up with the police? If he's going to say something incriminating... Anyway, not the point. Turns out it's not actually Ryland, it's this random other servant in disguise because they're smarter than him, Hastings specifically.
I feel like most people are smarter than Hastings.
So they're not able to tie Abe with anything, and they're not able to tie Olivier with anything, and so they just continue on in society because power.
Yep, how it be.
This is honestly a book of short stories as well.
It really is. And it threw me off how much time passed.
So much time.
It was always shocking to be like, oh, more time has passed.
Why have they not tried to kill him earlier? That was my thoughts. And it was like, you are letting Perot live a long life. So once again, we're left wondering what the heck to do until Jap shows up. He does that a lot. And gives another mystery. And he's like, oh, there's this other mystery. Let's try to get your mind off the big four. And it's the Yellow Jasmine mystery. And Jap, do you have a tendency to name your cases? Is that what's happening here? Because he already has a name for it.
He's got to keep all his mysteries straight.
This is the gory part. There is a man who fell into a fireplace head first.
And toasted his face off like a marshmallow.
And with his dying whatever, he writes yellow jasmine and two lines under it at an angle. So they head out. They're like, okay, this is weird. Why not? So this dude has lived with his nephew for like 8 months before his death. After not feeling well.
His long lost nephew, right?
Yes, basically. The guy who owned the house and the brother got in a fight. And so he hasn't seen the nephew in forever. So he wasn't feeling well that night and got a shot, like a hypodermic needle to help his heart. What?
I have questions.
Immediately, the doctor did it. There is no question. You have shot this man with a hypodermic needle and suddenly he dies? Suspiciously. Because as Perot points out later, what man wouldn't just get up? No one's gonna hang out in the fireplace. And there's no sign of force. So this man just basically passed out suddenly. So to skip a lot, guess what?
The big four. Shocker.
The doctor is number four. Yay! Also, I'm very proud of myself because I remembered that yellow jasmine is poisonous.
Ah.
I don't know why or where or how, but here we be. And I was like, isn't that poisonous? And then he bought a book about plants and it was like, oh my gosh, it's poisonous. It's like, ha ha ha.
Another win.
So many things. We really should know more about the plants we grow, but beside the point.
Just don't eat them or inject them.
And do not inject them with a hypodermic needle towards your heart into an artery or wherever he was putting it.
In general, that's just bad practice.
And of course, they try to go for the number four, but he has left and very kindly got the original doctor from the area that was on vacation to come back.
I mean, at least he did that.
That was very nice of him. I'm not sure why he did that, but yay. So the normal doctor's back, and so everyone's good. Okay.
Surprisingly kind. He was like, man, I just killed this person, but I couldn't just leave this village without their doctor.
He learned to really care about them.
Oh.
I guess.
Character development.
But not at all. So a month passes, and they don't have any clue until they dine with Jap.
Mm-hmm.
Are we sensing a trend here?
It's always Jap.
And so he tells him of a really weird death that happened during a chess game.
Hey, chess.
A young man was playing chess and was like on the third or fourth move and he keels over with a heart attack. And he's like, huh. And Jap is like, but here's the interesting thing, because it was an American playing a Russian master. And he's like, but I bet it was meant for the Russian master and not for the American. So Perot's like, okay.
And the only reason the Russian master played him is because he was getting grief for not doing it.
Yes. He had been like, no, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I want to do it. And then the American was like, I will harass you until you do. And so it eventually happened.
You will do it.
I will get the papers involved in it if I have to. So the chess world was in a tizzy until they finally had their match.
Yes.
So Perot's like, okay, I'll look at the body. And so he ends up finding a small burn on his hand. But other than that, everything seems normal. Eventually you find out there's no poison in his system anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clutching a white bishop still because he was clinging to it. He died. And once again, why is the cover with a black one? Anyway, so they head to the Russian master. And once again, it's a man who moved into the area not too long ago and is now living with a relative that they haven't seen since they were a child.
Always with the suspicious, I haven't seen you since I was a child, people.
Immediate alarm bells.
How often does that happen?
I don't know.
That people just don't question it back then.
This is 100 years ago. Don't ask me. In Britain. I'm not going to claim to understand British people now. So they're like, okay, she's definitely an agent of the Big Four. She's going to try to kill the Russian master. Ah! Ha ha ha.
But no. Not so fast.
It gets Perot because eventually they realize what's going on. They run to the house. I think they were still trying to make sure that the old master was all right. They're like, oh no, they're going to try to kill him.
Yeah.
And thank you, Agatha Christie, for not doing it again because, ha ha, subverted expectations. The niece is the real person. It was the uncle that was number four. That's why he didn't want to play the guy, because he doesn't know anything about chess. And so the guy harassed him into it. I still don't know why he didn't just continue to ignore him.
He got so sick of him. He's like, you know what? We're just going to kill him.
Yeah, maybe it'll look too suspicious. fish? I don't know. I don't question his motives, but he decided to consent to this. And so he learned like three moves because this guy apparently has a really famous opening. And so he learned three moves of the defense. That's all he knows about chess in the world. And the chess piece had an electric rod in it. When it moved to a very specific square, it electrocuted him.
So they really would have been screwed if he'd done a different opening.
Right? But predictable, I guess.
What we're learning is predictable will get you killed.
So many questions. And they set up all these things to make it look suspicious. Like, oh, this chessboard was gifted to him. And it was like, well, on your next match, please use it. Or something like that. So yeah, once again, they have been thwarted by the big four. Except not really, because they managed to save the niece who was gagged and chloroformed.
Oh yeah, and they said you could smell it when you walked in. And I was like, how strong does chloroform smell?
Well, to do it right, you need a lot of it. Because it's not like the movies where put it over their mouth and they instantly pass out. It actually takes some time.
Admittedly, I've never used chloroform or experienced it.
I just appreciate that she continues her trend of good poisons.
Yeah.
So it's January now, and even Perot calls Hastings out.
Yeah.
You're staying a long time past several months, my friend. And I was just like, just say you're in love with Perot and let Cinderella be done. I don't remember her actual name. They don't even use her real name.
It's just always Cinderella.
This entire time, they control the world. But Hastings is like, what could possibly go wrong? And Perot's like, they could use other people against you too. And he's like, what could possibly go wrong?
A lot could go wrong. And then it does go wrong. It all goes wrong.
Immediately, he gets a letter that's like, hey, we have your wife.
And he's like, oh, this is what could go wrong.
She deserves so much better. It hadn't even occurred to him. He hasn't thought of that woman his entire time he's been there. Let's be honest. Oh my gosh. Terrible husband. So he gets that note, and then he gets another note. And this other dude comes in and is like, hey, we're going, and grab that telegram and don't be suspicious about it. And hats for Patrick here. Hastings takes four books off the shelf and throws them onto the ground because earlier Hercule was like, hey, put your books back. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. And then he takes four coals out of the grate and puts them down. And he's like, wow, that's all I have time for. And I was just like, you could have done four things. Why are we only doing two?
Right.
Why did you need the effort to do two, but you didn't do... Anyway, my desire for nice numbers beside...
You just also see Hastings become more and more paranoid.
He should be!
Yeah.
He's not paranoid enough! But I still appreciate it. It's a good job.
Good job, Hastings. Stroke of genius.
Yeah. He gets taken to Chinatown to this random house that's abandoned that has a secret room in it, and they crawl under there, and then they find this even more impressive room with all the niceties of things, and finds a high-level servant of Li Changyin. I thought we were gonna meet him, but I guess not.
Yeah, I was like, oh, we're probably gonna meet him. No, you thought.
So they want them to write a letter to Hero to get him involved in a trap, or they're going to kill him.
And torture his wife.
And he's like, no, I would never do that. Never! And I'm like, you're just... They have your wife, dude.
The thought of them hurting his wife never crossed his mind.
Because the way they say it, it was like, oh, we can cause a lot of harm. And he's like, I don't care what you do to me. I would have thought it was my spouse. Immediately, I would have been like, you're threatening my spouse.
Literally, the first thought was like, oh no, his wife. And Hastings says, oh no, me.
And so they're about to be like, oh, I'm going to murder you. And he holds himself together and like, oh, you did a good job here. But we have your wife. And I'm like, they have your wife. And he's like, oh, they have my wife. So after, he still doesn't want to write the letter. And so they detail extensively different tortures that they could do on her. And I'm just like, bruh.
Thankfully, they didn't tell us any of them. But poor Hastings.
No. But how much convincing did you need?
Right.
He's a good friend. Terrible husband.
Yeah.
So eventually he writes the letter and they dictate it what it's exactly supposed to be like. And Hastings is like, oh no, this sounds exactly like me. So he's not able to do anything weird. And so they're able to get that sent out. And he's like, okay, well, send the telegram to save my wife. And he's like, well, we're not going to do that until we have Perot in the trap. Ha! Goalpost moving.
A staple of villains.
Yeah. Perot shows up.
Just so much sighing during this chapter.
So Hastings has to act the part and be like, hello, my friend. The letter I wrote where I said, come to this place that we must search it. Let us do that now. And at the last second, Hastings is like, no, Perot, run. Don't do it.
Forget my wife.
Terrible husband. Perot, of course, pulls a James Bond. Or an Inspector Gadget, honestly. Gas bombs.
Yeah, big Inspector Gadget feelings.
He just gas bombs the place, and thankfully they were like, oh, hide your mustaches. And so he had a bulky muffler. And so he had a respirator on under it.
But absolutely, Hastings, you're on your own, bud.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, not much you gotta do for him, but he has his respirator on and whatever. So get to the end, and Hastings is like, no, my wife. And Perot.
Always prepared.
Always prepared, never telling anyone else. Perot has had her in hiding this entire time. 3 months has had her at a safe house because he's not an idiot and does care about his wife.
Perot cares more than Hastings does, actually.
Wow. So the bus gives them a little bit more to go on, but there are notes about the psychology about Perot and Hastings. And Perot is very happy about this.
This part cracked me up.
And so he's like, haha, I'm understanding number four. He must be an actor. Why not?
Makes total sense.
So he's had these agents sent out to work on this long list of suspects of this very specific, oh, he's super average and everything, and he has a small nose, and he doesn't have facial hair. Stuff like that, where it's like, oh, you can add on, but you can't take away, and so he must not have a lot, basically, because he's so good at disguising himself.
But can we just talk about the psychology of how they just roasted Poirot and Hastings, basically?
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
I was just cackling the whole time. And Hastings just used it against Poirot. It was so funny.
Okay, so this scene is Hastings reading him, and he reads his, and he's like, that's stupid. That's not like me at all. And Perot's like, haha, but it is like you. And he's like, well, yeah. Well, your thing says, insert totally accurate things about Perot. And Perot is like, well, maybe not everything in their reports is correct.
It just made me laugh. I was like, oh my gosh.
Accurate. So they've decided he's an actor. Perot has sent out these agents with a long list that they've created, and they've managed to narrow it down to 4 people.
Figure.
I hate this because there were 4 people with very detailed descriptions, and for the normal person this will not be a problem because they just, you know, read it. But me, taking notes of every named character and all the stuff written about them, was like, this is going to take forever. It took forever.
But you survived.
I got all the details just for them to immediately be like, and it's this one.
Of course. Why wouldn't that happen?
So they have decided his real name is Claude Darrell. Or Darrell.
Darrell? Claude Darrell.
Darrell. I tried to make it fancy.
In the recording, it sounded like they were saying Claw Darrell, because it's Claude Darrell.
Yep.
Claw Darrell. I was just like, this man's named Claw at this point in my brain.
So they've sent out information about this dude. He's like, hey, do you know any information? Blah, blah, blah. And so they meet this lady who is apparently a little trashy, but Hercule don't care. He takes her out to a fancy restaurant, plies her with wine. She remembers this habit he had while eating and has an 8-year-old photo of him. And she's like, I'll find it for you. She's like, awesome. And so Perot hires a PI agent to watch over the house tonight. And it's like, okay, we're going to keep this lady safe. We want the thing.
No, you're not.
Well, on her way home, she gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
I know you have agents watching Perot at all times, but geez, that was fast.
They wasted no time. But it's also, how did the big four know she would be the one to say something?
Well, I think they were, number four specifically, were following them around, apparently, the implication. And he would have recognized her and been like, oh, crap. I didn't untag my Facebook photos. I just deleted mine. Those still exist. So he noticed her and was like, okay, she has a photo of me. But I was just impressed. And he was like, meh, did. On the way home.
It's very fast.
Hercule tries to rush to the house. She's dead by the time they get to the hospital. But they tries to rush to the house to get the photo. And they find a frame that was in, and on it is a new sticker, 4 shillings. And I was like, okay, that's cheeky. That's cheeky, number four. I appreciate it. So we are once again in a standstill.
Seems to be a recurring theme.
Yes. These little episodes we're going through. This is a TV show, really. Early 2000s, 30-minute cartoon TV show. There is, I don't remember what it is in reference to, but I must point out the second time that Hastings is getting points for being witty. He's been conversing, quote, to some Russian with apparently every letter of the alphabet in his name, end quote. Yes! Yes, 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 yes.
Did you show your husband that?
No, I need to, though. But yes, sometimes we'll be cheeky and be like, oh, you should try to do my Duolingo. And so I'll try to do his Russian, even though I don't know that alphabet at all. But I've actually done pretty well. So yes, 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 yes.
It's a very him thing to do.
All the yes to the witty remark. So one day Pearl is just like, we're here. We need to do this. And so he sets up a meeting with the Home Secretary for England and then the French Premier.
Yeah, I don't really know what that is, but
I don't know. I do not know anything about French government. So those two, and of course, Mr. Ingalls.
Okay.
My alarm bells went off for no payout. So Perot's like, hey, here's the thing, and tells them all the stuff, and they don't believe him. And the French guy's insulted because he's just insulted one of the best scientists in the world who happens to be French, and the French are milking it for all it's worth, as every politician does.
Oh, yeah.
So Perot's like, well, just in case I die, here's the plan. And afterward, they leave, and Ingrid is like, oh, I need to go to China soon. And Perot's like, why? And he's just like, well, I need to do stuff there, and I'm just as safe on the road as I am here.
Why are you still alive? Are you sure about that?
That too. But why are you still alive? Period. Anyway, Perot tells Hastings that he needs to bring in his twin brother for help. And he makes a slight Sherlock jab where it's like, oh yes, men like him often have brothers and equal intellect in higher places, but not as cunning as the other one, basically. And I was like, okay.
The sass.
Okay, Doyle. I don't think she likes Mycroft.
No, she's bitter about him taking her glove.
So they go back to his house, and a nurse is waiting there for them. The man she's caring for has a strange illness, and the doctor doesn't seem concerned about it. She gives the details, and it's really obvious his much younger wife and the doctor are having an affair. Really, really obvious. And it's like, oh, the wife gives him food sometimes, and he gets sick afterwards, and the doctor won't do anything about it. And I saw them kissing in the garden, and I'm like, why are you here?
Honestly, yeah.
Why are you here? You have all the answers.
He just likes getting involved.
Perot should have, I don't remember at this point, but definitely should have been suspicious from the beginning. But to keep his interest even more enticed, she's like, oh, in a state of pain, he mentioned the four doing it to him. So immediately Perot's hooked. It's like, we're going. So he goes and pretends like, oh, I'm tracking down a former servant who's been accused of jewel thieves. And so the wife talks to them, but he kind of digs at her. And so she leaves immediately. And then the doctor comes in and announces, hey, she's not feeling well, but she still wants me to host you for dinner.
Totally normal.
Tell me you're gonna poison me without telling me you're gonna poison me.
Yeah, that's just totally very nice behavior. Very kind of them.
So bizarre. So Mickey is the son of the guy that's sick and the stepson of the young lady that is currently his wife. He's like, hey, my stepmom is definitely trying to kill my dad to marry the doctor. And I'm like, yeah, you should really do something about that, sir.
Sounds like a problem.
So after eating, Perot pretends he has stomach pains. He's like, oh, I must go lay down upstairs. I don't understand that, any of that.
I can't imagine just, first of all, just going to someone's house that I don't know. And then second of all, being like, oh my God, my stomach is killing me. Can I go lay down in your spare bedroom? What?
Not to a stranger. If I was feeling sick, I'm in the car. I'm leaving.
I'm going home. I'm going to be like, deuces.
Different world. So they're upstairs. And Perot's like, we need to get out of here immediately. And Mason's is like, what? Mickey apparently did the number four dinner trick that they were told about, which he uses the bread to clean up his plate.
Yeah, interesting.
I know so many people that do that, but this is what we're going with. So he did the thing, and so Perot's like, we need to get out of here. And so they climb the ivy down to get out and get away. So they get to the house, and one of the books is in a weird place, or is askew or something. And Hastings is like, haha, you did the thing that you complain that I always do.
And Perot had already been acting weird ahead of time and was inspecting the realm, and Hastings just like,
he was literally inspecting the room, and Hastings is like, haha, you did the thing. And then he moves it and triggers a trap.
Yeah.
Which I'm a little surprised Perot immediately didn't hone in on that, but you know, we gotta let Hastings trigger the trap for plot.
Of course.
And afterwards, it's basically a bomb, and he gets told that he made it out almost completely unscathed, even though he triggered the thing, but Perot died.
Yeah, let's do some critical thinking here.
And so immediately I was like, oh, that's why he didn't mention it. He wanted to spring the trap. So Hastings really believes he's dead, and he's like, I must stay for revenge. And the doctor tells him, hey, you should go home, because that's what Perot would have wanted. I was like, because that's what he does want. But he doesn't do it. And then Crother also is like, hey, you should go home. But he doesn't want to do it. So Hastings puts out an ad to get more information about number four. And then he sees in the newspaper that Ingalls has disappeared on the ship he was taking to China.
They got him.
Interesting. So at this point, a man from the number four, an agent, comes to Hastings and is like, hey, you should go home. And Hastings says, no. And Hastings is convinced it's number four who told him that. I was convinced it was someone sent by Perot.
Hastings is just too stubborn for his own good.
Well, then the Countess shows up in a real nice car and is like, hey, you should go home.
No.
Everyone, bad guy and good guy, everyone's concerned about Hastings. Go home.
So a hospital calls, and they have a dying Chinese man who is apparently the servant of Ingalls. And he has a message for Hastings immediately. Basically, what he says is a couple of Italian words, which Hastings is unable to really make out himself. So it's kind of a good thing he didn't go home.
Yeah.
I'm giving him crap for it, but you know, if he had gone home when the doctor told him to...
His stubbornness worked out.
I mean, I don't want anyone necessarily to be like, hey, Hastings, you did a good thing by being stubborn. But, I mean, we're going to do it again. Pats for Patrick. Let's go. So there's a letter from a lawyer that gives him a letter from Perot himself, supposedly before he died, that tells him to go to South America.
Go home. And now Hastings is like, oh, yeah, I should.
Because he promises it's part of the plan. And he's like, okay, fine.
I guess I'll go.
I have questions of the logistics in this section. But he goes on the ship. And in the middle of the night, a crew member wakes him up and is like, hey, there's a destroyer out there that wants you. And we're going to have another man take your place.
Totally not suspicious at all.
And Hastings is like, huh, I've been validated. And it's like, yeah, all the passengers are asleep. But I don't know. That seems very risky to me. But anyway, so he gets on the boat and he's taken to the Belgian coast, where he goes to a villa in the hills of Belgium, and to the surprise of only Hastings, Perot's alive.
Shocker.
And they get together, and Hastings is excited, and he has adrenaline, and all that, and he's like, cool, now what?
I love how he's just excited that his friend's alive, and not just supremely pissed off that he faked his own death.
I mean, I'd be happy. I don't know, I would trust him.
I would be happy, but I'd also be kind of peeved.
I would trust him at this point. Yeah, that's exactly what he needed. And he does explain. He's like, I needed you to think I was dead. So they would think I was dead.
To play your part. Yeah.
So all this, Hastings full of energy, ready to do whatever is needed of him. And it's like, okay, so now what? And Hercule says, we wait.
Like, we haven't been doing that for months and months and months and months.
And they do indeed wait. So at this point, Hastings gives the message from the servant, and Hercule's able to put it together, and it's like, haha, it's actually this very specific coastal city in Italy, and that's clearly where they are. So they get news, finally. China's cut off all communication with the rest of the world. Abe is going to the continent, Europe. He went to the UK, is now going to the continent. And Olivier has left Paris for Italy. And he is informed that, don't worry, England, France, and Italy are on Perot's side at this point. So it is now time to act.
Yes.
Okay, that totally happened. Not my cynicism about government. But anyway, they head to Italy, to this resort town. And Perot is convinced that their hideout is in the mountain there. And so they stop at a hotel where a man is hiding his face. And Perot insists on going to dinner there at the hotel. Even though Hastings is like, you're really recognizable. He's like, no, I must go. Number four is there and very surprised that Perot is alive, which is good. Good, you should be. Now he knows that he's alive and he has to act fast. And Perot is like, ha, that's what I wanted him to do. So Perot goes up and grabs his jacket and takes a while to do it. And I was like, he's not just getting his jacket, but Hastings isn't going to think that. So at dinner, number four approaches him and pretends to be a tourist. And then the lights go out and Hastings gets knocked out again.
Hastings is just having a rough time.
He has been knocked out more times in this book than Nancy Drew has been in the entirety of her book series.
Oh my gosh.
I'm concerned. So many times. Perot went along with this because they get kidnapped and taken to the hideout, because both of them get knocked out. this is a great plan if you don't consider the fact that number four could have just thrown them off the cliff.
Yeah. He really just could have been like, and over you go.
Could have stabbed them, could have shot them, could have thrown them in the freezer.
But no.
So many options, but no, they get kidnapped to exactly where they need to go.
Of course.
That was convenient. So there they find Ryland, Olivier, and the Countess hanging out, because of course she does, and then number four, and then there's an empty chair. Ooh, who could that represent? And seriously, still up to this point, I was convinced Ingalls was going to come out and be like, haha, actually, it has been me this whole time. I am number one. No.
That would have been so cool. That would have been quite the twist. The betrayal.
I don't want to tell her how to do her business, but no, he ends up committing suicide after he hears the news of what happens in the mountain. So scary. Anyway, the entirety of China has stopped communicating with the rest of the world. I think you could get three new Muppets.
Yeah, honestly.
Anyway, so they're there and whatever, but it's a ha ha ha. It is not Hercule Poirot, but his twin brother.
Dramatically reveals the mustache.
And the twin brother is like, haha, my brother is smarter than you guys. And we have had special powder on my legs that police dogs are following and are coming here. And it's basically like, surrender or die. There are your options.
Which do you pick?
So they're going to blow up the mountain with all of them in there, because why not?
Just the entire mountain. Totally normal reaction.
Hercule's twin is like, but the Countess, what about redemption? She's like, what about redemption? And he's like, well, redemption. She's like, well, okay. Honestly, he's like, hey, here's what you thought was your dead child. Let me reunite you two. And she's like, huh, that's something to live for. And gets him out. Before the mountain explodes, the entire mountain, kaboom.
True. Very big kaboom.
And it is revealed, haha, it is not Poirot's twin brother.
It is Poirot.
It is Poirot. He shaved his mustache and gave himself a real scar. I'm going to pretend that's what Death on the Nile was referencing.
Yeah.
We're just going to pretend. And so, yeah, it's that. And I think color contacts, because his eyes are green, but the twin brother's eyes were dark. So, haha, it was Hercule all the time.
Yeah, so now I'm like, does he have a twin brother, or was he just playing the long con?
He was playing the long con. He doesn't have a twin brother. So the police find the three bodies, and like I said, there's news about what happened, and then Li Changyin commits suicide upon hearing it, and so Poirot jokes about, oh, my friend, you're going home. Maybe it is time that I retire and grow vegetable marrow.
Which, weren't you just doing that in a previous book?
Yes, that's the joke.
I was like, but you already tried that. It didn't work out for you.
That's why he's laughing. It's an inside joke he did not share with Hastings. But then they hint at that maybe he should settle down.
Right? Which I was like, whoa, whoa.
I mean, I'm not against it.
I'm not, but it was also just shocking.
But that is the roller coaster. We have gone on our roller coaster. I hope you had fun. I hope you kept your arms and legs inside the cart at all times, because that was a roller coaster.
It was a fun roller coaster, though.
General thoughts. What? This stopped being a mystery so early on in the book, because it starts out and it's intriguing. It's like, who are these people? What do they want? And then you get into the pattern of short little episodic moments where they're defeating quote unquote number four, or being bested by number four over and over and over again, until they pretend Poirot's dead, and then they get the news and they're like, okay, well, let's do the thing in Italy. That's my summation of the book. And I don't begrudge the book it, but it was not what I was expecting.
I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't this.
Mystery?
I was like, it's gonna be chess related, like you thought, based on the cover. It was like chess, barely.
I mean, there is a chess episodic moment, and then they reference it being a game and having to wait for your opponent to make their move.
Yeah.
Nothing could have prepared me for this book.
Kept you on your toes.
And that's just what it is. So one question for the author. Now I'm really curious, if she had to, who's Poirot's Irene Adler?
Oh.
What would she be like? Because he and the Countess kind of have a little bit of chemistry in this book, and she's also like Catwoman, or Irene Adler, I'm in it for myself, but I do the bad deeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Irene Adler, Sherlock, Catwoman, Batman. Who is Poirot's? Because it has to be a woman who's insanely interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
And also very intelligent herself. I think she would admire that above anything else.
Yeah.
But what would she be like? I have questions.
Now I want to know. I didn't even even think of that.
Right? They brought it up. And granted, once again, Agatha Christie thinks romance in detective novels is boring because the romantic interest ends up just being boring. So I'm not surprised.
Yeah, that's why I was so shocked when they mentioned Poirot settling down. I was like, what?
Yeah, so I'm not surprised Poirot never gets... Well, I don't know. I haven't read all of his books. We've read the third from the end, and he's definitely single in that one. So we will see.
I don't know. My question was this her first attempt to try to actually kill Poirot off? And then she was like, nah, I should keep going, and brought him back. Somewhere early on in the draft of the book, did he actually just die, and that was the end of Poirot? Or was she still okay with him at this point?
I do not know.
Because I know by the end of the series, she's sick of him. She hates him.
Yeah, so many books.
She's like, you know what? He's dead. He's dead, dead. Not coming back. He's gone. So I'm like, is this her breaking point?
So at this point, she has not even written a Miss Marple book. That's not going to happen until 1930, and she definitely way preferred Miss Marple. So I do not know that answer. She sure writes a lot more, though.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a little early for her to truly hate him, but...
I would really ask her if this was her first attempt of killing him.
Maybe. The world may never know.
Nope. Not unless we can make time machines.
And even then, I don't know if she would tell us. Rating. I'd give this a Michael Bay movie out of 10.
Yeah.
It even had explosions.
I gave it a James Bond movie out of 10.
It was the explosion for me. There were several bombs. I could see it.
Oh, I was going more for like the international espionage. I was like, yeah, that feels like James Bond. Not quite as suave and woman heavy, but
still. A lot of explosions. Would you read it again? Maybe? Like I said, I don't mind the book and I don't begrudge it. It's action orientation. I just don't see what I would get out of it from reading it another time versus her mysteries, where I love to reread because I'm like, ooh, let me pick up on all the things I never picked up on before.
Yeah.
Like the second time I read Roger Ackroyd, where I was like, oh, I noticed your very specific wording. And then at the end, he's like, haha, my very specific wording. And I was like, haha, I got it before you said it. But this one just kind of is what it is. There's like little mysteries, but they're pretty straightforward.
Yeah. If I ever just wanted a healthy dose of action, I'd read this one. But there's also many other books I could read if I wanted action. I feel like those are written quite frequently.
Yeah, it's not quite to suspense like it is nowadays, but I have a lot of suspense books on my TBR on Goodreads. I just don't know what I would get out of it. Favorite of the series so far. I've been waiting for this moment because I will say Murder of Roger Ackroyd. And you will say...
It was a close tie between this one and Murder of Roger Ackroyd, but what got Murder of Roger Ackroyd to be my favorite is that I would read it again. That was my tiebreaker.
That's fair.
I thoroughly enjoyed both of these, and I think like they both kept me on my toes the entire time, especially with the plot twist at the end of Roger Ackroyd. But I was like, I'd reread that. I don't know if I would re-listen to that.
It's very true. I feel vindicated. I knew you would like it.
It was a good one. I think she peeped just off that one.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you for exploring the Big Four with us. Join us next time when we'll be exploring Cress by Marissa Meyer. I'm Sam Reiner.
And I'm Hannah Rossell.
And we hope to see you and a friend here next time. Escape With Me Book Club is a Lunar Skulk production. Check us out on TikTok or Instagram to keep up to date with us. Lunar_SKULK.